From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The state of California this month launched an anti-discrimination lawsuit that might be the first of its kind in the U.S., aimed at the tech company Cisco Systems. The lawsuit accuses the firm of caste discrimination amongst its Indian employees. While India's caste system is not quite visible in the U.S., especially to non-Indians, in truth, the majority of Indians emigrating are among the highest castes in their home country, and they often use their networks to their advantage. Highlighting how caste is, in fact, an American issue is the new popular Netflix show, Indian Matchmaking, that features several Indian American households looking for suitors for their adult children in a way that preserves caste, as well as class, and aspires for lighter skin tones and a preservation of patriarchy. My guest is Thenmori Soundararajan. She is a Dalit American artist and activist and the founder and executive director of Equality Labs, a Dalit civil rights organization. She recently wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post about the Cisco lawsuit. Welcome to the program, Thenmori.
Oh, J-Beam, and so glad to be back. So nice to hear you and see you, Sonali.
So for those of our audience who don't even identify or can't identify or understand what the word Dalit is, let's begin our conversation there. Tell us and explain to us in a nutshell what that word means. It's spelled D-A-L-I-T.
Sure. So when we're talking about the system of caste, caste is one of the oldest systems of oppression in the world. And it's one in which, you are born into a caste, and at birth, your caste determines your social purity and therefore your job. And for those that are at the top, it means kind of limitless access to opportunities, resources, and power. And for those at the bottom, which includes, Dalits, who were formerly known as untouchable, our communities are sentenced to a caste apartheid, where we are segregated into separate places where we live, different places of worship, and also a proximity to structural violence and discrimination. And, again, this system affects over 260 million people in India alone, but it's not limited to India. And I think that one of the things that we've done in our work in Equality Labs is really expose how we've seen that wherever South Asians migrate to, they also bring caste into the institutions that they participate in. And it's, as someone who is a Dalit American, I spent the majority of my career not only talking about my own experience of coming out as Dalit American and the kind of discrimination I faced within South Asian American institutions in the United States, but also how this structural discrimination, impacts our politics back at home, because these upper caste networks here in the United States, discriminate against Dalits and also mobilize Hindu nationalist power that also has had drastic impacts in terms of our, countries at home.
So you wrote an op-ed about what is taking place at Cisco and also what the lawsuit from California is about. Tell me what exactly has happened. I mean, this is Silicon Valley attracts very large numbers of tech employees from India, and Cisco is no exception to that. So what did the lawsuit contend happened at Cisco?
Well, I think what's very important for people who are new to this case to actually to recognize actually how historic this case is, because it is the first time in American history that an American institution is being sued for caste discrimination on its premises. And the reason why that's so historical is that the fights that Black Americans fought, not just for themselves, but for all Americans in terms of civil rights, opened up categories of protection for protected classes of people. And I think that, while most American institutions are used to the idea of thinking about racial bias or gender-based bias, or even, bias towards, communities that are struggling with disabilities, the issue here at hand is that caste is not a protected category in institutions in the United States. So as a result, when caste-oppressed Americans go to schools, go to government organizations or to the corporate sector, they really have no structural remedy because, one, there is HR departments that aren't prepared or culturally competent to understand what caste is and how to spot caste discrimination. But also, many of these companies, like where South Asians are present, particularly in the tech sector, are jobs that are also layered with that immigration visa called the H-1B visa. So there's really a detriment for people to report these caste incidences because, you know, you're not only kind of creating tension at the workplace, you could also jeopardize your immigration status. So the case is so significant because we have a formal body in the state of California who saw the facts of this case and saw the complaints of John Doe, the complainant at the core of this case, who raised the issue that there was both a hostile workplace in Cisco with relationship to caste, and also that he had faced repeated discrimination and demotions for his caste background and identity being found out, to the point that he felt like it was significant enough to raise this issue. And this really, aligns with so much of the research that we've done in Equality Labs. Like, we published a research report called Caste in the United States in 2016, which was one of the first reports to document caste discrimination in the country. And what we found was rather alarming. You know, 1 in 4 Dalits had said that they experienced some form of physical or verbal assault. 1 in 3 had said that they faced discrimination in educational institutions. And 2 out of 3 said that they faced workplace discrimination. And I think that that was really what was so startling. And our report, again, was cited in the legal filings by the state of California, is that this is very much a case that we've seen all across Silicon Valley. Because what's so specific to the Valley compared to other corporate sectors where we've seen caste discrimination complaints come out from Dalit employees, is that Silicon Valley, like the largest ethnic group that is really recruited into these companies, comes from Indian tech talent. And, you know, there's a whole network of engineering schools, and in particular, the ones where the defendants who were accused of caste discrimination, they came from a set of like really premier institutions called the Indian Institutes of Technology, or the IITs. And I think a way for audiences that are just getting familiar and trying to understand the landscape, you can think of the IITs like our Ivy Leagues. You know, it's the place where top tech talent and intellectual talent goes. And, you know, in those places, they're notorious for casteist thinking and processes and policies. And across the board, what you see is a culture of casteism where people who come from very privileged castes convert their caste capital into tech capital. And in their journey of excelling in their academics, they have a whole bootstrap narrative where they talk about, we are here because of merit, not because of, you know, government appeasements or reservations, which is the term for affirmative action in the Indian and South Asian context. And they're using that kind of language to basically put down people who are caste depressed that are coming to these campuses, through affirmative action measures. And we know like how deadly that conversation is in the United States. Like, we've seen the blowback against, you know, affirmative action measures that were meant to diversify our campuses and our business practices. And what we see is these upper caste students and faculty that create that very hostile culture in those academic institutions then go on to create very casteist alumni networks into the Silicon Valley tech companies. And these companies like hire very often through a process called internal referrals, where
it's basically networking, right?
Yes, it's basically caste networking. So those internal networks like often like feed in the same folks of the same caste. And so you have entire departments in multiple companies that are often made up only of upper caste managers, only of people of the same caste. So
much of this may be happening in ways that are entirely invisible to non-Indian supervisors, right? Unless they actually take the trouble to talk to people who are excluded?
No, absolutely. Because again, when you don't have these companies competent on the issue of caste, what they're just going to see is brown people getting mad at brown people. They're not going to understand the nuances of this deep structural system that is actually older than race, but that has been seen as a protected category in multiple countries and multiple international bodies. So the fact that we have such a large South Asian population working in California, in Silicon Valley, and the multiple tech hubs that we have, and there isn't a critical intervention in terms of the diversity and inclusion measures of these companies to understand what caste-oppressed employees are dealing with, is a serious problem. And I really believe that the Cisco case is just the tip of the iceberg, because since the Cisco case came forward, just our team alone got over 200 anonymous complaints from employees all around the valley who
Wow.
talked about similar instances of harassment, discrimination, demotion, and sexual harassment. And the tragedy is that it's such a huge problem. People are definitely struggling in these environments, but they're afraid and they're not reporting it to HR because of the immigration concerns related to the H-1B. And this is really where the question of caste diversity is really on a collision course in terms of worker rights. And these companies really have a duty of care towards their employees to think about how they can create safe workplaces for caste-oppressed employees to thrive. And I think, Sonali, one thing that's really important to note is that even though these are California-based companies, the Cisco ruling actually has global ramifications because these companies all have localized offices around the world, and most critically in India. So think about, the Dalit employees that are working in those companies. In terms, when you think about the largeness of Microsoft and Google and Amazon and Apple's campuses, it could impact thousands. This is why it's so critical to look at what happens with this case, because again, one of the questions I always ask is, how was the state of California able to do what the Indian government had not done for
Right.
decades?
And let me bring up this question of how we compare caste discrimination in India versus here in the United States. One might imagine that caste discrimination might be perhaps more rampant in one, in the home country, in the homeland of India, than it is here in the United States. From what you can tell, is caste discrimination as rampant within the Indian American community as it is in India itself? What are the differences?
So I want to make very clear, like caste as it operates in the diaspora is not at all what it is in our home countries. Because in our home countries, particularly in India, we have total domination of every institution, whether it's the judiciary, the parliament, corporations, what you name it, even the army, by dominant caste people, which means that the level of the culture of impunity as it relates to caste violence and structural exclusion is heartbreaking. It's why, like the week of George Floyd passing, we actually had numerous deaths and murders of Dalit peoples all across India, and nothing happened. I really want to center this conversation on the fact that the fight for Dalit peoples to be recognized in terms of our struggles and our fight for freedom and dignity is one that is hundreds of years old. And this battle in the diaspora is just like one front of many as we fight for our freedom at this time. That said, it would be a real mistake to not focus on the ways dominant caste networks in the United States have conveniently recreated hubs of power and discrimination that are directly impacting the lives of Dalit and other caste-oppressed Americans today. So, for example, in California, a really important case for people to know is in the early 2000s in the city of Berkeley, there was a landlord, Lucky Bali Reddy, who was the second most powerful landlord in the city of Berkeley in terms of the number of buildings and the money that he made. And this man basically trafficked the Dalits from his village to basically work all of his properties. Wow. So they worked as restaurants, they worked as buildings. And the most disgusting part of it, Sonali, was that he trafficked young Dalit girls to be his sex slaves. Mm. And the way they found out about this case was there was a carbon monoxide fire in his building, and he had workers wrap up the young girl's body in a rug. And as they were trying to take it out of the building, they dropped the rug and her body fell out. It's outrageous. And then when they did the forensics on their body, they found that the baby was his. So the thing is that, you know, anyone that knows the trafficking networks, you know, in India, and also how deep of a violent system caste is when it comes to bonded labor and slavery, understands like what exactly Lucky Bali Reddy's like business and caste sense was. But what was very interesting is that, you know, because of the against Lucky Bali Reddy, it actually set into play some of the first anti-trafficking laws in the state of California. But it just as easily could have been the start of this conversation on caste, because it was a completely casteist experience. And obviously the workplace there was hostile when it comes to caste. And I think this is where there's like a really important lesson to be learned with the Cisco case, is that every time a press group spikes, you know, and I think, you know, in terms of the Dalit community, like when we fight, you know, we actually unearth the frontiers of rights that need to be fought for many peoples. And I think this is why I'm taking very seriously this case, the state of California, because John Doe has taken a courageous stand, and our community really intends to support him, because we know the difficulties and the violence that comes from when you speak truth to power.
Let's talk about the new Netflix show, Tenmori, that I'd mentioned. It's gaining popularity both in India and here in the United States. It's called Indian Matchmaking, and this is a very interesting program. I have to admit, I sort of watched the entire season, and it, right in the very first episode, this you know, matchmaker for hire, who, you know, is the central thread through these Indians in India and Indian Americans, mentions the preservation of caste and also talks about the desire for light-skinned suitors, and but caste isn't mentioned very often in that show, but it's sort of this underlying theme. They're all Hindu weddings, of course. I don't know if you've seen the show, but it has come under fire from Indians here in the United States who are sort of, you know, collectively cringing at it.
Oh, I mean, without a doubt. Actually, caste is actually quite explicitly named, Sonali. If you like, in watching the show, like if you look at the biodata graphics that are there for multiple people,
right?
There's a category that they've made called community. And in several of those biodatas, you find out that someone is a Kshatriya and they're looking for Kshatriyas.
So the word community is a euphemism for caste?
Yes. So they will either put language, or they will put community, you know, in terms of ethnic community, but many of them actually use caste categories, and because they're looking for a good family. The euphemism of good family or family values are really about maintaining caste networks as well as like family networks, right? But, you know, I think the thing for anyone that's watching that show, like, obviously, I think people are looking for like a frothy summer watch during the pandemic. So I get it, right? But I think that you have to really think about your politics, like when you're watching a show like that, because it's basically lays bare the very mechanisms of caste. And I think that, you know, there's a Dalit leader named Dr. Ambedkar that talked so deeply about how, you know, the foundations of caste are really in gender and in patriarchy, because caste is primarily propagated through a system of endogamy or marriage within one's caste. So when people are seeing matchmaking, they're not seeing transactions related to romance. They're seeing transactions related to the protection of caste and familial power. That's why there's such an emphasis about keeping it in the family. We want a good match for our family values. all of those things, you know, when you think about what a good family means in our context, it means upper caste, it means light skin, they live in a particular district. You know what I mean? It's all these like regressive, you know.
And deeply, you know, patriarchal. There's all these searches for well-educated women who are then expected to stay at home and, you know, be their new husband's mommy.
Well, and also this idea of compromise. And what I thought was so offensive about the show is that this show is being produced against the backdrop of an unbelievable amount of honor killings of, you know, against interfaith and intercaste romances and relationships. So to know
in
that
India.
Like, you know, in India, but also there was a very famous like honor killing here in Chicago of a father that was upset about his daughter being with someone who was from a caste oppressed background, and he set fire to their apartment rather than have her continue with him. I think that this question of what it means when we're holding up our traditional values, those are the things that dominant caste communities really need to reflect upon, just the same way that like we are seeing America reckon with its own racial caste system. We are asking people to think about what are your norms that you are supporting and celebrating and consuming that actually lead to Black death. And when I look at a show like Netflix's, you know, I forgot the name of that show, whatever it's called, but when I look at that show, the thing that I see is that in celebrating, you know, arranged marriage and the process of what it means to create these like very purified ideas of what a good marriage life is, we're also sedimenting brinical patriarchy. We're also sedimenting caste rigidity. And we're also sedimenting, you know, the acceptance of honor killing and violence against couples and relationships that don't fit that model because they are intercaste or because they are interfaith. And it's just such an unnecessary narrative that we need at this point, particularly when you see so many clueless dominant caste characters in there that don't even know what they're doing and are stepping into very conservative frames and entrapping themselves and other people.
Well, the program is, as I mentioned, getting popular here in the United States. It's being covered in mainstream media. And certainly I would encourage our audience who are non-Indian to seek out Indian critiques of the program. That's my PSA for the day. Tanmori, give out the website for your organization, Equality Labs, where people can find the results of the survey that you had mentioned earlier.
Oh, sure. Like, you know, we'd love people to like, you know, join us in our dialogue about exposing caste in the United States and also some of the powerful activism that's happening. Right now, we have a Color of Change survey that is raising a petition to add caste as a protected category at both the state and federal level, as well as like some research that also can help you, you know, readers and listeners like all across the country learn more about caste as a problem and also how Dalits are leading solutions like all around this issue. So you can find us at equalitylabs.org, and you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And our caste survey can be found at equalitylabs.org/caste survey. So definitely please check it out. And, you know, we really can't wait for you to join us in dialogue.
And we'll also post a link to your Washington Post op-ed that was published recently about the Cisco lawsuit. Thank you so much, Tanmori, for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Take care.
My guest has been Tanmori Soundararajan. She's a Dalit American artist and activist, founder and executive director of Equality Labs. And we'll post a link, as I mentioned, to both her website and the Washington Post op-ed about the Cisco lawsuit. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.